Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our Inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune composed of many things. The victory of General Washington at Yorktown. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is a tall, gaunt man holding a nation together through a cruel war. And a people knit closer through the magic of the telegraph. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. This month marks the 150th anniversary of the start of a great tale of adventure and daring, the trailblazing expedition of Lewis and Clark in 1804 through an uncharted wilderness to the Pacific Northwest, a vast territory known in history as the Louisiana Purchase. Theirs is a bright and brave chapter in the history of our then new nation. Tonight, we pay tribute to the courage, daring, and diplomacy of two young American leaders, Captains Lewis and Clark. It is the year 1803. President Thomas Jefferson has finished dictating a long letter to his private secretary, Meriwether Lewis.
Send a copy of that to Vice President Burr, and that should take care of it.
Yes, sir.
You can transcribe it later. Right now, I want to talk to you about something I've had on my mind for a long time.
Anything wrong, Mr. President?
Not at all, not at all. No, as a matter of fact, you're about the best secretary I've had. But how do you feel about it?
Well, I was very honored when you offered me the position, Mr. President. It's been quite an experience.
Perhaps. But I've noticed your restlessness lately, my young friend. After all, spending an early life in the woods, hunting, trapping, then a short career in the active army might cause a man to champ at the bit once he settled down with a routine job like this.
I'll admit it lacks in excitement at times, sir, but it's highly interesting.
Yes, the inner workings of a government do have their tense moments. But tell me, are you familiar with the territory known as Louisiana?
Of course, sir.
Then you also know that we're under negotiation with France for the purchase of that territory.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'd like to pose a very pertinent question. Just what are we buying?
Afraid I don't follow you, Mr. President.
Well, let me put it this way. The Louisiana Territory is vast, almost unexplored. And I have reason to believe that our negotiations will be successful. That territory will become a part of our nation. But is it good land, rich land, valuable and fur, conducive to settlement?
I can appreciate your concern, Mr. President.
Well, then you can also appreciate the need for exploration of this territory. It must be charted, must be mapped. Many questions concerning it must be answered.
Oh, then you propose such an exploration at this time, sir?
I do. In the past, I've helped instigate a few attempts at exploring our western regions. They failed. But I propose one now that I hope and pray will not fail. Yeah, you sit back, Lewis. You're about to fall off the edge of your chair.
Oh, of course.
I knew such a conversation would excite you, my young friend. But from my observations during these 2 years that you've assisted me, excitement of youth is not your only attribute. Courage, honesty, much daring are a part of your composition. Lewis, the leadership of the expedition is yours for the asking.
I'm overwhelmed, sir.
Well, of course, if you don't want the responsibility...
Oh, no, sir. I mean, yes. This is so wonderful, I don't know what to say.
That's quite some time away, my boy. Perhaps your power of speech will return in time for you to say goodbye.
I'm sure it will, sir.
I want you to take a new look at books, study for a while, botany and so on. Then we'll select your men and outfit the party.
Speaking of men, sir, may I make a suggestion?
By all means, it's your expedition.
Recently in the Army, I renewed a boyhood friendship with William Clark. We often talked of adventure, and Will is probably as qualified as I am to lead such a party.
Clark. In relation to George Rogers Clark?
His younger brother, sir. There is no one with whom I'd rather share my command.
Well, he comes from good stock, and with such an enthusiastic recommendation from you, how can I refuse? You write him and see what he thinks of the idea.
I will, sir, right away. But I think I know what he'll say. This is the answer to a dream.
Dan, may it answer all our dreams, Lewis. And I wish you the best of luck.
William Clark was notified and quickly accepted. But there were months of preparation ahead. Early in March 1803, Meriwether Lewis left for Philadelphia, there to study under men of science of that city. When young Lewis had finished his studies, he proceeded to Camp River Dubois, just north of St. Louis, where Will Clark had already selected and had begun training a small group of early volunteers.
Hip, 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 ha, hip, hip, ha, hip, hip, ha.
All right, Sergeant Floyd, dismiss until this afternoon.
Yes, miss.
Well, they're drilling well, Captain Clark.
Yes, they are. So far, we have a hardy group. Let's hope we can recruit more of the same caliber. Tell me, Sergeant, who's that large man over there? I've forgotten his name.
Oh, that's Patrick Gass, sir. Private Gass.
I'd like to speak to him.
Gass? Private Gass!
He's a good man, sir.
Yes, sir.
Captain Clark would like to speak to you, Gass. That'll be all, Sergeant. Check the men's muskets and prepare for target practice this afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Gass, I noticed you from my window earlier this morning.
I'm hoping I did nothing wrong, sir.
On the contrary, you were throwing a tomahawk at a target. I believe you had a wager with one of the men.
That I did, sir. Not that I'm a gambling man at heart, sir, but... Also, the young pup bet me I couldn't split a string at 20 paces, sir.
Well, all I'm interested in is that you did split that string. I was very impressed. It's not easy to master the tomahawk, but apparently you have. I want you to instruct the other men in its use.
Bless me, sir, you want each of the men to carry a tomahawk?
I do. From my correspondence with Captain Lewis, I understand we'll be traveling through many Indian territories. I want the men to be adept with every weapon it's convenient to carry. In an emergency, should our powder get damp, we may owe our safety to other weapons. For one thing, tomahawks.
Yes, sir. The point is well taken, sir.
This afternoon at rifle practice, I'll see that each man is issued a tomahawk. You will then be in charge of their instructions. The men should...
Sir, I beg your pardon.
Yes, Private, what is it?
Captain Lewis, sir. He just arrived.
Good, good. Where is he?
I showed him to your quarters, sir.
Fine, thank you. Gass, we'll discuss this training later.
Yes, sir.
Shall I have the cook prepare a meal, sir?
Yes, I doubt if Captain Lewis has taken lunch yet. Have it sent over to my quarters.
Very good, sir.
Welcome to the finest army post north of St. Louis.
Clark, you're certainly a sight for sore eyes.
Yeah, it's been a long time, Lewis.
Yes, we haven't stood like this since our army days, huh? Well, looks as if we'll share one another's company for a long time to come.
True. What you've written of the expedition sounds wonderful. I haven't been this excited since we hunted possum together back in Virginia.
You still remember that?
I remember that a young fellow 10 years old bagged the first possum and put a 14-year-old Will Clark to shame.
Ah, just a lucky shot. let's get back to the present. The president's basic instructions call for us to, see here, follow the Missouri River to its headwaters, cross the highlands to navigable waters of the Columbia River, and follow it to the Pacific.
Sounds fine, if it works.
Well, it's believed that this will be our best route, but of course it's based on a map that was drawn partly from hearsay and partly from imagination. Who knows what barriers lie ahead in that wilderness?
Let's hope before long we'll know from experience.
And so the months passed quickly, months of recruiting, laying in supplies, and rigorous drilling.
All right, keep firing. Two bullseyes per man and you can break for chow, but not until. Morgan, bring your shots up. Come on now, pour it on.
No, lad, no. You must let the handle go. Easy, like. Now watch. You see, lad, don't be throwing a tomahawk like it was a hot stick you wanted to be rid of. trees are gentle. Gentle.
Thanks. That's better. Now you're getting the swing of it.
Finally, the preparations were complete. The party at full strength consisted of 45 men, 15 of whom were boatmen who were to go only as far as the Indian villages of the Mandan Nation. On May 14, 1804, the party broke camp and proceeded up the mighty Missouri. Destination, the Pacific Coast. Route, make one.
Come on, Gath. Pull on that oar. Or maybe you could use your precious tomahawk to paddle us upstream.
Less talking, Gordon, my lad. I'm more pulling on your oars, my sentiment. Oh, bad sister, Patrick Gass, whose boyhood dream is to be a soldier, sitting in a boat like a blooming sailor.
Maybe you'd like to swim up the Missouri.
Thank you, lad. No, it's much drier in the boat. Besides, it's a chance for experience.
Experience?
Sure. When we reach the Pacific, I just might not come home overland like the rest. I might just build a little canoe and set out for China. Oh, now there's an expedition to stir an Irishman's heart.
Oh, no. Suppose for the time being you just keep stirring the water here, Gas. To me, the Pacific coast looks as far away from here as China. I'll even brew you a cup of tea if we get there.
When we get there, laddie boy. When?
With abundant game upon the shores and the morale of the men good, the party pushed westward with little difficulty. On June 26th, they reached the mouth of the Kansas River, where now stands Kansas City. 43 days had been consumed in crossing what is now the state of Missouri. By July 26th, they made camp at the mouth of the Platte River, 600 miles from their point of embarkation.
Gas, you, Gordon, Goodrich, and Howard stand watch.
Better post an extra man to the boats, too, Sergeant Lloyd.
I'll take that watch myself, Captain Clark. My bones are tired, but somehow I don't feel like sleeping.
Well, don't overtax yourself, Sergeant. We've still a long way to go.
Yes, sir. Hello, Sergeant.
Good evening, Captain Lewis.
Clark, could I speak to you for a moment?
Oh, of course. That's all, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Clark, I've been thinking that perhaps we should push on in the morning instead of spending time here talking with the Indians. They're already used to white men from the traders who stopped here.
Seems a good idea to me.
From all reports, we'll have our difficulty with Indians on up the Missouri.
The Sioux?
No. They seem to regard war as a sport.
Well, let's hope they don't play any war games with us. My hair may have grown quite long, but I don't relish a Sioux haircut.
Gas, must you keep throwing that tomahawk?
Practice, lad, practice.
Well, practice somewhere else. Every time I see that tomahawk bury itself into that tree, I think maybe soon one might bury itself in my skull.
Oh, now my aim is not off that much, lad.
Not you, but those redskins around here. 2 days ago now. We've been sitting around here while the officers exchange gab with those chiefs. And the rest of the Indians just mill around, stare, and never a smile.
Maybe I could tell them a good joke, Gordon Boy. Then you wouldn't have a stern-faced Indian scalp in you. He'd be smiling.
One of your jokes would get us all burned at the stake for sure. I'd just like to move on.
Oh, now, lad, don't be fretting. The Indians have put out the peace pipe, and we've put out clothes and food. Everybody's happy.
Except me. Sure, they say peace now, but the next minute they may change their minds, and bam! I don't trust them any further than you can throw a stick.
Throw a stick? Or a...
Will you please practice somewhere else?
That's trouble over here, boys.
Nothing, Sergeant. Nothing at all. We were just discussing whether or not an Indian tomahawk would penetrate Gordon's skull. And I doubt if it could.
Well, just keep it friendly, boys. We're all a little on edge. But Captain Lewis tells me the powwow's about over. He doesn't expect trouble from...
What's the matter, Sergeant?
Hello. I feel funny.
You better sit down, Sergeant. Gordon, get Captain Clark, quick.
How is he, Clark?
No better this morning. Seems to have a high fever. He's getting weaker all the time. This blasted heat doesn't help any.
Is private gas in the shelter with him?
No, Gordon is. I sent gas off to get some sleep. He was up all night.
Well, so were you. I suppose you get some rest, too.
No, I can't sleep. I'd better get food, though. Did the chiefs leave happy?
Yes, they promised no interference in this region anyway.
Go eat. I'll look in on Floyd.
All right. You better breakfast, too, Gordon.
I'm not hungry, sir.
One sick man is enough, Private. Go on.
Yeah.
Yes, Floyd.
This are you, Captain.
I'm right here.
Hey, I gotta move on, Kevin.
Just take it easy, everything's all right.
Gotta move on.
Be easy there.
I can move on. I gotta move on.
You just rest now. We'll be moving on soon. You'll be well soon.
Kevin.
Yes?
This expedition. I always dreamed of something like this. In unknown. In... I want to go on.
Floyd. Gordon, get Captain Clark.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, Floyd. Yours is a greater expedition than ours.
Sergeant Floyd was buried atop a high bluff near a small river which was given his name. Upon the votes of the men, Private Patrick Gass was made sergeant, and the party did what Floyd had desired. Move on. In late October, the expedition reached the Mandan Indian Nation some 1,600 miles from St. Louis. Here, Fort Mandan was constructed, and the men settled down to endure the winter and await the coming of spring.
Am I intruding?
Oh, come on in, Clark. Better double the guard immediately, Sergeant. We have several guests on the post today.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's on your mind, Clark?
I have a surprise for you. What do we need most when we start out again?
An accurate map.
Something within the realm of possibility, please.
You haven't found a guide, have you?
I have. Not only that, but an interpreter all wrapped in the same package.
And he speaks English?
She speaks English.
What?
Two squaws came on the post today. You can imagine my surprise when one of them spoke to me in English.
I don't understand.
She belonged to a tribe of the Snake Indians. The Mandans captured her in a war and sold her at an early age to a French trapper named Chabonneau. He taught her what English he knows, raised her, then married her. We couldn't ask for a better guide into the country we're going. She spent her childhood there.
Well, of course, but a woman...
Well, she followed Chabonneau on his trapping expeditions. These Indian women are a hardy lot, Lewis.
Well, if she could keep up, we do need a guide.
Well, after she spoke to me, she took me to meet her husband, Chabonneau. Huh? He agrees to go with us if we'll pay him. All she cares about is seeing her own people again.
Well,
it might be hard to find another guide.
All right. Only I never thought when I left Washington I'd be led across the country by a woman.
The woman's name was Sacagawea, which translated meant bird woman. She and her husband moved on to the post to await the passing winter and guide the party on. But having a woman on the post was a strange experience for the explorers. One noteworthy experience occurred 5 months after the arrival of Sacagawea and her husband, Chabonneau.
No. Just relax, Chabonneau. Do you care for a smoke?
Oui.
I'll roll you one. No reason to be getting... all excited, you know. just relax. Don't get worked up, no.
Sergeant, it is you who is spilling the tobacco.
Eh? Oh, well, this is all new to me, you know. I mean...
Oh, listen.
Oh, Lord. I couldn't have taken much more. I better go tell Captain Lewis and your recruit has just answered your old call.
In April, the boatmen left the party and returned to St. Louis carrying documents, collections, and trophies. There remained 32 persons to carry on, including the infant son of Sacagawea and Chabonneau. The bird woman proved an able guide, and on May 26th, Captain Lewis ascended to the summit of a ridge of hills surrounding the camp and had his first glimpse of the Rocky Mountains. Lewis wrote in his journal,
"Obstructions continue and fatigue the men excessively. The banks are so slippery in some places and the mud so adhesive that they are unable to wear their moccasins. One-fourth of the time, they're obliged to be up to their armpits in the cold water, and sometimes they walk for several hours over the sharp fragments of rock which have fallen from the hills.
Howard! Go let that rope slacken, lad! Keep it taut!
Sergeant, over here!
Now, what is it, Gordon?
Goodrich has a bad gash on his foot!
It's all right.
Move on up shore, Goodrich. I'll take that line. All right, Donald. Heave!
The party pushed on. Then finally in August, Sacagawea led them to several Indian villages, villages she had not visited since her childhood.
Goodrich, have you seen the sergeant?
I think he's in the Council of Chiefs with Lewis and Clark.
Oh, it's a wonder he isn't practicing with his tomahawk. Seems to get the urge every time we're around redskins.
Don't tell me you're worried about this bunch. Why, they're the Bird Woman's people. They've been friendlier to us than any tribe we've met.
An Indian is an Indian, and I... Oh, well, here comes gas now.
Never again, lads. Never again will I see it happen.
Huh? What are you mumbling about?
Storybook. Bless me, if I didn't see something you only read about in a storybook...
As if you could read.
Gordon, your petty insults will not rile me this day. My heart is touched. At the council, the bird woman sat down to interpret for the captains. And then suddenly her eyes filled with tears. She stared at the chief, cried, then ran to him. Lads, it was her own brother.
Her brother?
Aye. Needless to say, it was a touching sight. The chief was moved too, only not so much as Sacagawea. Matter of fact, I felt it. Tear in my eye myself. Like a storybook it was.
I wish I'd seen that. The tear in your eye, I mean. Imagine, Patrick Gass, human being, like a storybook, all right.
By trading with the Shoshone Indians, the party acquired horses and proceeded westward. The trail was rough as it wound through the Rockies, and heavy snow caused the horses to stumble often. Progress was slow, and by the middle of September, all wild game had vanished, and melted snow was the only water supply.
It's no use pushing on in this storm, Clark.
I agree. We can camp on that ledge.
Sergeant Gass!
Yes, sir.
We make camp over there.
Very good, sir.
What about food?
No game, sir.
Well, then, kill one of the horses.
Captain Clark.
What is it, Sergeant?
Another man on sick list, sir.
Disease proved a hard enemy, but slowly the starved, weary party made its way down toward level land. They had crossed the Rockies, yet even here food was scarce, the danger of starvation ever present. Lewis fell very ill, but led his party on to the bank of a small river before he became unconscious.
Seems to be a fever, sir.
Yes, he's resting comfortably now. I don't think it's too serious. What about the rest of the men, Sergeant?
They're weak, sir.
Well, they'll still have to work. It's either that or lie down and die.
Yes, sir.
This river must be a tributary of the Columbia, and the Columbia leads right to the Pacific.
Oh, it will be a relief to take to water again, sir.
That it will, but we'll need something to take to water in. Order the men to begin work immediately on canoes.
Within a week, Captain Lewis was on his feet, and the weary company once more took to the waterway, down the Lemhi into the Great Salmon, and then to the waters of the Columbia. By trading with Indians along the way, food was secured, and slowly the party regained its health. There were still many miles and many obstacles to face, but the group labored on, and finally, on the 7th of November, 18 months from the day they left St. Louis, a camp was set up. A camp from which was a clear view of the great Pacific Ocean. The westward journey was done.
How long ago it seems.
What's that, Clark?
I was remembering the day I got your letter asking me to join the expedition. Only it seems so long ago. Not merely a few seasons, but an eternity.
I know how you feel. The expanse of this country, even beyond our anticipation, it's awe-inspiring. It's almost as if the section we know as home is in another world, another time.
Yes. And there will still be a hard struggle to get back to that world.
But it can be done, Will. We've proven that. Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
You'll rest here a few days before moving on to a permanent winter camp. Let the men relax. They've earned it.
Yes, sir. And if I might take the liberty, I'd like to say, well, sir, congratulations.
And the same to you, Gas, and to all the men. They have earned it.
Congratulations. The first of many to be bestowed upon the Lewis and Clark expedition. The winter on the coast was hard. The journey homeward is equal in hardship and danger as the westward march. Still, their ragged party reached St. Louis and home September 23rd, 1806, and were greeted by a public which had long before given up the expedition as lost. Many honors were heaped upon Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, two young men not unlike the young men of today who venture into the unknown realm of supersonic speed. This month marks the 150th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark undertaking. It took them 28 months to cover more than 4,000 miles. Today, any young pilot could cover that same western route in about 8 hours. Yet, the spirit is the same. Adventure, determination, courage. A spirit which is the inheritance of every American. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the National Vice Commander of the American Legion, Department of Pennsylvania, Mr. Herbert M. Walker.
Today is May 30th, Memorial Day. General John A. Logan, Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, inaugurated the first Memorial Day observance in 1868 with these words, "If other eyes grow dull, and other hands slack, and other hearts cold in the solemn trust, ours shall keep it well as long as the light and warmth of life remain to us. The solemn trust is well kept. Today, in 1954, we commemorate those defenders of liberty who gave their lives at Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, Chateau Terry, Corregidor, Heartbreak Ridge, or at any place on land or sea where this right was secured. The gift of life is infinitely precious. The simple act of awakening on a spring morning, of breathing the fragrant air, of hearing all the sounds of joyous earth, of knowing one is alive, this experience is the priceless gift of our Creator. But what would life be without freedom? How joyous would a spring morning for a soul who greets another day of bondage and oppression? In our land today, we are still a free people. We realize that our freedom is dearly bought. We offer today in all humility our gratitude, our respect, and our prayers of remembrance for those who paid the supreme price to secure it. In the words of Lincoln, we promise that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. Truly, freedom is the inheritance they left us. To maintain and secure it is our challenge.
Thank you, Mr. Herbert M. Walker. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans dreaming of the future forged that which we possess today. Today's story, the Lewis and Clark Expedition, was written by Dick Carr and featured Lamont Johnson as Captain Meriwether Lewis and Lyle Talbot as Captain William Clark. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Ben Wright, Whitfield Connor, Howard Culver, Marvin Bryan, Glenn Denning. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Wall speaking. Senator Guy M. Gillette will meet the press tonight on the NBC radio network.